Tonight I thought to speak about the topic of God is five. Often we hear a person say that God is one, truth is one. So what can it be, this revelation that God is five? Hopefully, by our trying to understand this transcendental reality, our appreciation of spiritual variety will increase. Now, the question is, why is it so important that we have an actual appreciation of spiritual variegatedness? Well, the answer is that without understanding spiritual variegatedness, there's no spiritual world. There are no relationships. There are no flavors. You see, because people in general lack knowledge of spiritual variegatedness, they can't give up the material world. We may theorize that the ultimate reality must be homogeneous, without any differentiation, without any distinction, without any individuality. That theorization comes from a psychology of frustration. But we have difficulty seeing that deeply into ourselves. Because of our frustrations, lifetime after lifetime in material existence, when we are simply relying upon our own faculties, our own intuitions, our own comprehensions, we assume that spiritual perfection must be devoid of variety, individuality, personality, qualities, activities. Now, actually, in the core of our being, we are always spontaneously attracted to personal variegatedness. We generally admire persons who love and need people. Even we may not feel like being like this all the time. So we admire persons who seem to relish people and thrive on personal interactions. And something within us tells us, I'd like to be like that. If I could get over all my hurts and pains and abuses and letdowns, yeah, I'd just like to love people, be with people, appreciate all varieties of people. We have that longing because in our original spiritual situation, we're surrounded by unlimited spiritual variety. Our mistake in material existence, though, is that we look for the flavors, the relishable flavors of variety. We look for that on the material plane, on the material platform. And therefore become so burnt out and frustrated, weary, exhausted. We shouldn't blame our quest for variegatedness. So bhakti clearly distinguishes between the quest for variegatedness and the searching for variegatedness in the wrong place. So we have to finger the real culprit. You got to catch the real burglar. And this can be kind of subtle in us. Our aversion to full on accepting our soul's eternal quest for unlimited variety. We've been so deadened. Let's face it, material existence means you've been deadened. You've been through so many blunt and deadening experiences. And you get some hopes, but these hopes are dashed. Or, at best, very partially fulfilled. And we have to struggle very hard to just partially fulfill these hopes. As you know, more than ever, life in the big city has become a struggle. I was reading how if you're fortunate to have a decent job these days, it's not enough that you just work the long hours that often are expected these days. No, when you finish work, you've got to spend ample time every day networking on the internet or at various social functions, whatever type, because there's a good possibility you could lose your job, and therefore you always have to be networking in your off hours to build up contacts and keep your situation live. Reading this, I was struck with how merciless the material energy is. Because that struggle in material existence becomes very severe, we feel resentment, although maybe unconscious. Why does life have to be like this? And that resentment turns into negativity. It turns into, we become desensitized. I don't want to feel so deeply for so many things and so many persons. It's life in the big city. Just put on your armor and grit your teeth. Make it through the day. Every once in a while you can try to let yourself go and try to enjoy, but have an appropriate dose of cynicism. You know that things aren't going to be what they promised to be, but anyway, you have to soldier on. That's the main thing. Lower your expectations. Very important for survival in the big city. Lower your expectations. I was flying on a plane from Delhi in India to Bangkok, and sitting next to me was a man in his mid-40s, and we started talking, and he told me about himself. He was a corporate engineer, not just an ordinary engineer, but a corporate executive engineer who was in charge of the construction of the Delhi subway. So, he was telling me about his current situation. He explained he had just divorced his wife, his first wife, a year ago. You know, it just didn't work, you know. Everyone's got to do what they got to do. We tried to make it last, but, you know, each one has to fly his own plane, and we just both thought that, you know, as he said, what the heck, you know, I mean, who knows? If you split up, there could be something better out there. So, they split up, and then very quickly he met someone else. And they married. And so now they had been married for less than a year. So I asked them, well, okay, so Alice, how's it going?
I don't know. I don't know. That fire that I was looking for, you know, it's just not there.
I said, come on! What is it that you're looking for?
He said, I don't know what I'm looking for, but what I expected, you know, it's just the magic is just not there.
I said, but you, you know, okay, you've only been married for less than a year.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but look. It's just not working. I mean, you know, the flavor is not there. I mean,
I said, well, why did you, get into this in the first place? He said, no, do I really have to, talk about that? You know, it's just, you know, I thought it would work, and, you know, it seemed like there was some magic, but now, 9 months later, I realize it, you know.
No, it's not going to work.
I said, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
I mean, come on, you just supervise the building of the Delhi subway.
Yeah.
So you can do that, can't you kind of sort out your personal life?
He said, yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, I don't have anything against, you know, this lady in my second marriage, but no, it's just not going to suffice. So, this is what material nature does to us. And this is why we get so hardened and desensitized. After a while, a shrewd person just gets tired of being disappointed and let down. So you lower your expectations, you keep a, how do you say, a stiff
upper lip.
Yeah, stiff upper lip. March on. In order to do that, you know, you've just got to desensitize yourself to any variegatedness around you. And so, whether we know it or not, at that point, impersonalism looks attractive to us. We, by our own experience, find no joy in the varieties of material existence. So it would seem natural to posit that if there is some kind of spiritual reality, it should be free from the variegatedness that so affected us in our material existence. So I'm pointing out a conclusion that so many of you know, but perhaps we're taking a different way, a different route to get there. How we've been desensitized and we don't want to admit it to ourselves. Because naturally, ideally we'd like to see ourselves as vibrant and sensitive and open. But meanwhile, something else may have happened. And it's a little difficult to face that reality. Again, we like to see ourselves as, you know, open persons, even, dare we imagine, free persons, free spirits. We like to see ourselves as relishers of various flavors. I know when I, in my pre-devotional days, living in Manhattan, Central Park West, I like to see myself in that way. I knew where all the action was in Manhattan, all the best musical events and theater and this and that and the other. But if I would be honest with myself, I would have saw that I was becoming desensitized. That, you see, this is my point, and it's a little subtle. In the quest for enjoying material varieties, we automatically become desensitized. We automatically become stone-hearted. Because you get beat up. You get disappointed. You become let down. Or
just the tediousness starts to wear on you. One of my brothers, he's a managing doctor. Big medical charitable organization, and I never forget one day he just out of the blue he said to me, tears in his eyes, the routine, I can't take it anymore. How did you avoid it? It was a rare moment that he just got so overwhelmed, he blurted that out. It was only once that he did that. But then, generally, most people, persons will put themselves back together again, put Humpty Dumpty back together again, you know, and go at it. I remind his wife of what she was going through when he was in med school, especially doing his internship, and they had married while he was, doing his internship. And so she became, the famous wife of someone who's in med school, which means you're not going to get, talk about quality time, you're going to get no time. So I was just passing through in Washington, D.C. on a trip to the USA from overseas. I was based in Europe at that time, and I was staying with my brother and his wife. And I just remember her crying, like,
crying.
I can't take it anymore. I just never see him. We just have no relationship. He's a doctor, he's going to be making big money soon.
You know what it's like. You know, this is not what I'm married for. I can't go on like this.
So I tried to say some consoling words as I kind of I had to leave. So anyway, years later, whenever I bring this up to her,
what are you talking about?
I said, don't you remember that? I don't remember anything like that. Now it's like, three kids later and a big house later and three cars later.
it's all blanked out,
Or else, basically she's letting me know, look, that's just all part of the struggle for existence, You just got to keep on keeping on. What I call that is becoming desensitized. And I find in my travels around the world that this desensitization is a necessary component of the struggle for material existence. You can't leave yourself wide open like you imagine you can. You can't wear your heart in your sleeve, and you can't be the vibrant person, fully expressive person that you imagine. The world isn't ready for that. In the world of illusion, the world of Maya, your efforts to open up meet with so many impediments and meet with such discouragement that inevitably you accrue scar tissue despite your best efforts. And that scar tissue on your heart makes that heart start to become hard. And there are not many persons who can face that reality. Because we like to think of ourselves as being gentle and soft and, I'm there for you. Have you ever told anyone that? I'm there for you. We like to see ourselves in that way. But meanwhile, the process of material existence is working on us. Just putting layer upon layer of scar tissue. The lumps in the heart
are starting to get harder and harder. Although we see ourselves as becoming more experienced, more wise, more open, but no, we are undergoing the process of material existence, and that means the heart's becoming harder and harder. If we take a deep look at ourselves and how we are going from year to year, we might be able to catch this. So due to that scar tissue on the heart, it would seem natural that that will affect our perception of higher reality. It's a natural psychological outgrowth of our material experience that we then conjecture a higher reality in which there is not endless variety and endless personal tastes and flavors. One of the great accomplishments of the Hare Krishna mantra is that it softens the heart. It sensitizes you again. In spite of being in the material world, in spite of having undergone for so many births and deaths, so many experiences, it's amazing how the Hare Krishna mantra will melt the heart. And that's why we embrace it so tightly. We can feel our hearts becoming sensitive again. We can feel our hearts melting. Let us speak about the Supreme coming as five, especially number one, to challenge any misconceptions we have. We would say that the Absolute is one. So then, Krishna says, all right, do you want to say it like that? It's okay, but I'll come as five. Not even two or three, I'll come as five. And what do you say about that? Understanding Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu means understanding Krishna coming as five. And all those five are eternally together. They function together. So as you know, there's Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Prabhu, Gadadhar, and Srivas. So in that Panchatattva, the five truths, three are predominators. They are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Among those three that are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is the foremost. Therefore we say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the Super Prabhu amongst the Prabhus, amongst the amongst the Supremes. You know, sometimes people have a hard time understanding why we are not polytheistic. If you say God is five, doesn't that mean you're polytheistic? No, because everything emanates from Krishna, but Krishna is full of unlimited variety. So the Panchatattva is a display of the variety of the Absolute Truth. You have three in that five that are Ishatattva, controller, supreme controller tattva. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Prabhu. And then you have two that are energies of the Supreme. You have Gadadhara and Srimas. Although all of them are equal in terms of quality, they're all on the in that sense, they're all one. They're all of the same quality. Yet, there is the variety of difference. And that difference amidst the oneness of quality is what creates flavors, rasas. Krishna coming as the Panchatattva challenges impersonalist in the way of offering of inconceivable variety of tastes. As we said, oh, you say all is one? Well, now we see all is five. And although the five are all equal in quality, yet they're different in quantity. And because of that difference, there can be a variety of tastes, which is the whole point of existence, which is to taste a variety of flavors. We can see that in our material existence, that ideally we'd like to taste in material life a sufficient variety of flavors. In our pursuit of flavors of material existence, we become so depleted. I wonder if you can catch yourself just having that, undergoing the process of depletion. You may resign yourself to that happening. Well, it's just part of life, depletion. You may try to rebel, but still that depletion goes on. When we consider the science of the Panchatattva, we always find the opposite of depletion. That's one reason why before chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we first take shelter of the Panchatattva. Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasudeva Guru Bhaktivedanta. There, as you know, is no offense in chanting the Panchatattva mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra. You can make offenses, but there's no offense to the Panchatattva mantra. And actually, the acharyas explain that the Panchatattva mantra is more powerful than the Hare Krishna mantra. So then your question would be, well, if that's the case, we should be chanting the Panchatattva mantra all the time. It's more powerful than the Hare Krishna mantra. But here is where personalism comes into the situation. Lord Chaitanya told us to chant Hare Krishna. And because we're trying to please Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, therefore we chant Hare Krishna. But just try to catch the impersonal streak in you. But wait a minute, never mind what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says about chanting Hare Krishna. The Panchatattva mantra is more powerful. We want power. Isn't that what it's all about? So push aside Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions. All right, that's he said chanting Hare Krishna, but that's okay. The Panchatattva mantra is more powerful. I wonder if you ever thought about this this situation you have. Yeah. It's more power. It's more powerful. Everyone wants power, right? Here we have a mantra that's more powerful than chanting Hare Krishna. So never mind someone's personal predilections. We should just go for the power. That's an appropriate New York conclusion. The Empire State. Go for the power. But no. We are personalists. we are trying to please Krishna and his representatives. And that is actually the most powerful thing. This is the conclusion of bhakti, that you follow the instructions of the person you're trying to please. And that is the most powerful thing. That's the most powerful reality. We are afraid of depletion. We don't want to admit to it. We don't want good times to end. We don't want good experiences to finish. But, as you know, depletion is a necessary part of material existence. It's just patent to material existence. Now, when we look at the Panchatattva, we see that they open up the dimension of unlimitedness. And no human being can forget such an experience. Because all our life in material existence, we're used to being just compacted and compressed. We're realistic. We're forced to be realistic that there's always going to be what we want is always going to be in short supply. Can you see yourself, how you become so accustomed to that? Not simply money that's in short supply. You know, time is in short supply. Good friends, good people are in short supply. So, whether we know it or not, depletion becomes a fear of depletion, or just acceptance of depletion based on resignation becomes a major part of our personal makeup. You know, that's just the way it is. It's life in the big city. You know, good things are in short supply. Don't get your hopes up too high, in other words. When we look at the Panchatattva, though, not only do we find such an extraordinary display of variegatedness, but we also find the opposite of depletion. We find that the realm of unlimited extension of our potentiality opens up. Many of you, if you've read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can remember those very beautiful verses describing the Panchatattva. How when Krishna came to this world, the treasure chest of love was sealed. Because Krishna is very strict. First, you accept his program. You surrender to Krishna, meaning you accept his methodology. Sometimes I find that people become afraid of this word, surrender. It sounds like, you know, you're walking down a dark street in the middle of the night and someone jumps out in the shadows, you know, sticks a gun in your ribs, surrender your wallet, surrender your purse. Actually, the word means you simply accept Krishna's methodology instead of your methodology. So, why not accept Krishna's methodology than ours? It's clear ours hasn't worked. And Krishna in Bhagavad Gita convinces you that his methodology is unlimitedly more superior. So, you know how Krishna is not so liberal. So therefore, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami describes that when Krishna appeared in this world 5,000 years ago, certainly the treasure chest of love of Krishna came with him, but it was sealed because Krishna puts conditions. Some of those conditions you know from the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakamshati samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim bhavate. Krishna says, all right, here are the preliminary qualifications you need. You need to be on the Brahmaputra platform. That means you need to fully understand that you are spirit soul. In theory, you should understand that, and also in realization. And prasanatma, you should be always joyful because you're not trying to thrive on the material platform. Nasonchati, natanchati. No question of hankering for something material or lamenting because you lost something material. Samat sarveshu bhuteshu. You see all living entities as equal. Madbhaktim labhatekra. Then Krishna draws the list of qualifications to a close and says, you attain all these qualifications and then we can talk about bhakti. Then you may be able to begin bhakti. So this is what Kaviraj Goswami means by when Krishna came 5,000 years ago. He certainly brought the treasure chest, the storehouse of love with him, but it was sealed. You had to undergo various qualifications. Now, that same Krishna comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Kaviraj Goswami describes the lid is off. The lid is off of the treasure chest. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes no stipulations. You can taste the nectar of bhakti and then make up your mind. It's like when you go to some bazaars or shops in India and the merchants are always trying to, as you're walking down the street, the merchants are always inducing you. Please come, try this. Just, no, you take a little. I'm not interested in buying. Oh, no, come. You take. Try this fruit, or try these sweets. And if you agree to, if you agree to do that, of course, then they induce you further. Yeah. Don't you want to buy now that you taste it? So that is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First taste, then negotiate. But Krishna is not so liberal. Krishna is negotiate first, then we talk about the taste. So this is what Kaviraj Goswami means when he says that the storehouse of love of Krishna certainly came with Krishna, but it was sealed. But Lord Chaitanya, the Panchatattva, those five personalities, broke the seal. So let's go back to depletion in relation to the Panchatattva. They tasted the nectar of love of Krishna, but the more they tasted, the more their thirst increased. So that, in the material, would sound like a troublesome situation. It's like trying to quench your thirst by drinking salty water. The more salty water you drink, the more thirsty you get. So, wouldn't that be a detriment to when we hear that the Panchatattva, the more they taste it, and after a lower Krishna, the more their thirst increase? No, because the supply would constantly increase. There was no shortage. So, by their thirst increasing, there was never any fear that what they were drinking would run out. Whereas in material existence, there's that fear. Your thirst is increasing, and soon there's going to be nothing more to drink, and your thirst is still there. That's what happens in lust. The more we try to satisfy the lust, the mortal lust increases, and then the situations don't permit you to go on lusting, even though the lust is raging in you. So it's very frustrating. When we look at the reality that the Panchatattva are giving us, we find that your thirst constantly increases, but the supply constantly increases too. So you can just go on drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking with no fear of limitation. What other ways did the Panchatattva show us access to the realm of unlimited expansion, unlimited expression? This is another point. For us to be satisfied in loving affairs, we need to see that those loving affairs keep expanding, keep growing. We expect that of relationships in the material world before we become cynical and resign ourselves. But still, in our heart of hearts, we'd like to see that happen. A relationship that constantly grows. Is newer and newer with every passing day. Because we can't get that in material existence, then we become unconsciously or consciously frustrated, and we have a hard time admitting that there could be a perfect spiritual reality with unlimited flavors and unlimited room for expansion in terms of interacting with those flavors. For the Panchatattva, they come to demonstrate that. They beckon to you, enter into the realm of limitless expansion on the personal, in terms of your personal expression. Your heart can finally open up without fear of having to contract or become compressed again. You can just open it and open it and open it and open it. There's no limitation. Whereas you know how it works in material life? You open your heart a bit and you have to shut it down. And you open it again and you have to shut it down. And so after a while, when you know it or not, you become very expert at this. And you take it as a normal life. Open, close, open, close, open, close. Keep it closed for a while. Carefully open it again. Close it. That becomes normal life. We're so conditioned, we don't even know it. So then, we encounter the Panchatattva. And they're showing us a dimension of being in which the heart can open and open and open and open and open and open. It's beyond our conception. Because it's beyond our conception, the Panchatattva show us by their own activities how to taste love of Krishna. They are Krishna coming in five features. In order for Krishna to taste love of himself, he comes in five different features. So, the more the Panchatattva dance, the more the supply of love of Krishna increases. The more the Panchatattva cause the rains of love of Krishna to fall, the more the inundation goes on and on and on. By their dancing, now please think about this. This is not just a poetic statement. I know some of you have read it before in Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is actually a scientific statement. But the more the Panchatattva dance, the more they make it easier for living entities to relish what is love of Krishna. So we are dealing with the opposite of a reality of scarcity. And that's what is so challenging about what the Panchatattva do. They are making access to the realm of unlimited expression so easy. It's so easy that maybe sometimes we're thinking, is this for real? Is this really possible? And that's the trouble that impersonalists had with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They constantly badgered him. Are you trying to say that just by chanting and dancing we retain spiritual perfection? And sometimes we ourselves, knowingly or unknowingly, may be tinged by those conceptions. Really, just this chanting and dancing? So the Panchatattva are showing us by example. The more they chant and dance, the more the flood of Lord Krishna increases. They make it easier by their chanting and dancing that the living entities can experience love of Krishna. This is personalism, dynamic personalism. By these divine personalities' activities, they're opening up the realm of limitless expansion. And that's what we're really hungry for. We want a love that constantly grows. We want a love that's not dependent on material conditions. Because dependency on material conditions means impediments. Material conditions mean impediments. So as soon as we see that there are some material conditions, we should know that means there are material impediments. And the heart cannot be fully satisfied. And amidst that dissatisfaction, whether we recognize it or not, what do? We blame others. We take it out on our near and dear ones. We blame other human beings. We have to find someone to blame. Otherwise, life is not complete. But to admit to ourselves that we're suffering because of trying to expand on the platform of limitation. To admit that to ourselves, it might be too upsetting for us to fully realize how boxed in we are in terms of our personal expression. We don't want to think about that, or we don't want to think like that, because it's like, what are you really saying my options are? I want to feel like I'm free. I don't want to face the reality of being boxed in, being enclosed in the matrix. I want to feel like I can express my potential to my fullest. I remember talking to my youngest brother. So, when a certain president was elected recently here in the USA, my youngest brother, he lives in Los Angeles, but he was flying to Washington, D.C. to be there at the inauguration, and he was taking his youngest son with him. And so I said, well, what are you doing that for? And he told me in such a solemn face, I want my boy to see there's no limitation. It like meant so much to him as a father. My boy is going to be there for this inauguration, so he understands fully. There is no limitation. I don't know, really. But there's an example of how, another example of how the living entity craves just room to expand. And so you so long for that room to expand that you imagine political solutions will provide that. Economic solutions will provide that. Relationship solutions will provide that. Just like this corporate engineer who was in charge of the Delhi subway construction. He ended one marriage and started another marriage, and he just thought there would be room for expansion. And then 9 months later, he's just very frustrated that it's just not there. It's not working. So it's very important, most important, needless to say, what the Panchatattva demonstrated. And they specialize in showing us the advantage of feeling helplessly dependent. Especially living here in New York City, no one likes to feel dependent. I remember living in Manhattan, and I remember taking pride as a young man. If I could get from point A to point B and shave off a minute by taking, just the slightest shortcut, I would feel a sense of accomplishment. New York might be. And you tell all your friends, instead of crossing the street, what you do is you go down into the subway and come out on the other side of the street, and you really take pride in those kind of things. So, to admit that you're helpless in your quest for taste, to admit you're helpless in your quest for variety, so much so that you actually become desensitized and hard-hearted and stone-like, that's not presented as a proper goal for a human being. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is especially the property of those who admit that they're helpless. And in approaching Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a helpless mindset, you're not decrepit, you actually become the most glorious. So this is the reverse that goes on in spiritual reality. In material existence, to be dependent and helpless is looked on as a very woeful condition. But in the spiritual reality, to be helpless and dependent and know where to turn, where to take shelter, that is considered the most glorious situation. So again, not that you're just helpless and dependent and have no idea where to take shelter. You're helpless and dependent, and you know exactly where to take shelter, and therefore you become the most glorious person. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to demonstrate that, how to take shelter of Krishna in a helpless, dependent way, and that way become the most successful human being. Simultaneously, Krishna has his desires to taste what is love of himself like. And he can't do that as Krishna. He has to do it as a devotee. So he comes as his own devotee. He comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the center of the Panchatattva. And as the Panchatattva, as those five, Krishna tastes the spiritual reality of being a devotee. He tastes that five different ways as the five members of the Panchatattva. In this way, Krishna demonstrates that spiritual variety is the essence of pleasure. And while tasting the pleasure of loving himself, Krishna also, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, makes it easier for everyone else to taste what is love of Krishna. So one last point. The seed of material enjoyment. And one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada explains that within every living entity in this world, there's both the seed of the seed possibility of bhakti, and there's also the seed of material enjoyment. They're both there. In the course of everyday material existence, the seed of material enjoyment becomes water. So this is something for us to think about. Material existence is not an innocent thing. And our immersion in material existence is not an innocent thing. Because what's happening, whether we know it or not, is that as we go about our day, making our merry way, the seed of material enjoyment is being watered. And as that seed of material enjoyment is being watered, just by our association with material nature, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam Guna Sangasa Sadasadhya Vijanasur, just by hanging out with material nature, even though our goals seem to us justified, we're doing what we gotta do, still, by that process, we're associated with material nature and becoming affected. And so part of the effect is that the seed of material enjoyment becomes watered and soon becomes a tree of entanglement. And when we taste the fruits of that tree, seeking to enjoy, we are actually tasting the miseries of material existence. By the activities of the Panchatattva, all the seeds of material enjoyment become inert. They become unable to sprout just by the chanting and dancing of the Panchatattva. So therefore the acharyas explained to us that the more people have a chance to contact bhakti, the more the seed of material enjoyment becomes extinct. This is an amazing scientific reality. The more that the work of the Panchatattva is distributed, the more you'll see material enjoyment diminish. And you'll also see the earth reveal its capability of supporting vast amounts of population, not only with their spiritual requirements, but also with their material requirements. So this is all the reality set in motion by the Panchatattva chanting and dancing. They make it easier to taste what is love of Krishna. They make it obvious that you don't have to dwell on the plane of limitation and compression. Your loving impulses can expand without barriers. And they also make it clear that the spiritual reality is full of variety. Although two of the members of the Panchatattva are not Supreme Personality Godhead. One is Gadadhar, Shakti Tattva, the internal potency of the Lord. The other is Srivas, Jiva Tattva, the marginal potency of the Lord. Yet, they are equal in quality with the Prabhus, the two Prabhus and Mahaprabhu. So, in one sense, you don't distinguish because qualitatively they're equal. But yet, to create varieties of spiritual enjoyment, they're different. So in this way, the Panchatattva, by their chanting and dancing, teach us about the spiritual reality. Where all the variety
varieties are of the same quality, yet their varieties are different, despite being varieties, but they're of the same quality. That is true knowledge of oneness. And the Sanskrit term for that is Advaita Gyan. Advaita Gyan means knowledge of non-duality. So sometimes people mistake that to think non-duality means homogeneity. Everything is the same. Everything is one. But the genuine understanding of Advaita Gyan is that all the varieties form one unit. The one unit has varieties. They are of the same quality, but there are differences. These differences are of the same quality. So this knowledge of Advaita Gyan is revealed in the spiritual world. And the Panchatattva come to the material world to display that variegatedness of the spiritual world. So that by they're making it easier for us to taste what is love of Krishna, we also can more easily understand the unlimited variegatedness of the spiritual world.